Oh, beautiful, for crime rates dropped from sea to shining sea.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymy Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, the Great American Crime Decline. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Well, hello. Hello. So we're going to talk about the Great American Crime Drop today. And I had a different episode kind of planned on the schedule, but I switched last minute because this week is just a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot. I'm advising.
It's registration week, and I've got like 250,000 advisees in the criminal justice minor that are emailing me. And I also didn't plan my grading so well because I've got a bunch of grading to do this week. So it's a rough week. So I picked a topic that I knew a little more than usual about so I could have an easier time putting this together.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So I've been having some real nostalgia for the 90s lately. I've been watching like a lot of YouTube videos about Ninja Turtle things for some reason. That's what's been on my mind lately, which was big in the 90s. Do you have a favorite Ninja Turtle, or was Ninja Turtles after your...
No. So it was a little after me. I was a little too old, but my brother, my younger brother, was way into them. And he went as one of the Ninja Turtles. I don't know which one for Halloween. But it's funny because they just put some like green makeup on his face. He looks really bad, actually. He's just dressed like a little ninja.
Yeah.
Like in a little karate outfit with a sword. Yeah. And then just some green makeup right here on his cheeks, but nowhere else.
Oh, did he have like a bandana specific color? Do you remember what color it was?
Red.
Red. Okay. Yeah. Red would be Raphael.
Okay.
And Raphael had the little size, the little short knife like things.
Okay.
Donatello would probably be my favorite. He was like the tech geeky person. And he's always the best to play in the video game. So video games, he's always the best one to pick because he's got the bow staff. So he has like the longest, the longest range. But yeah, I guess like,
it was also maybe boys. I don't know. I'm sure girls were interested too, but it seemed like.
I'm thinking like Power Rangers was kind of my thing. I thought maybe like Power Rangers would be to me what Ninja Turtles was to you, because Power Rangers was just right at that time where it was the first thing where I was almost like too old and I didn't.
I was too old for Ninja Turtles. Definitely too old.
Yeah. So anyway, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, heroes in a half shell.
Turtle power.
Yeah, they were really big in the 90s, early 90s. Know what else was really big in the 90s?
What?
Crime.
Crime.
Yeah, crime was way big in the early 90s.
Very popular, that crime.
And before we leave the topic of Ninja Turtles, the first live-action movie, which Jim Henson did the animatronics for.
Cool.
And I've not seen any of the new Turtle movies, but I would so much rather see a Jim Henson puppet than CGI Ninja Turtles today. But also, it was an indie film.
Yes.
Because none of the studios would pick it up because the He-Man movie was such a flop.
Oh,
so then none of the studios would pick up the Ninja Turtles movie. And actually, at the time, it was the most lucrative indie film ever made, the first Ninja Turtles movie. But also, if you've seen it, it's like super dark and gritty and violent, and it takes place in New York City, and everybody's like getting mugged. And it's actually a pretty accurate representation of New York City.
That's when I visited for the first time. It was 1987 for my school trip.
Did you get mugged?
No, but somebody tried to sell my friend X-rated fortune cookies in Chinatown.
Oh, wow. Did you go like down Times Square and see all the porn shops on Times Square?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, so it used to be kind of like seedy and scary and muggings and things all over the place.
Yes.
And that, you know, that's kind of illustrative of the times. Like the late 80s and early 90s was like the most criminal violent period that we've had in the U.S., at least in terms of since we've been keeping track of crime data, crime rates, and crime trends. So around the mid-60s, crime started to increase and homicide rates went from about 5 per 100,000 in the 60s to 10 per 100,000 in the 1980s. So in 25 years, that's a 100% increase in homicide. But then in the 1990s, crime started to decline, and within 10 years had fallen basically 100% back to where it was in the 1960s, and largely continues to decline to this day with a few notable exceptions. But criminologists call what happened in the 1990s the Great American Crime Decline, or the Great American Crime Drop. And the crime drop had a couple of distinguishing features. First of all, the magnitude. I kind of hinted at this earlier. The drop in crime and violent crime was substantial. So like I said before, within a decade, crime had fallen below the level at which it had taken 2.5 decades to get to. So like 2.5 decades it took to increase 100%. One decade, it dropped.
Yes.
By the same amount. Number two, it was comprehensive across categories, so all types of crime fell consistently, violent crime and property crime.
Property.
Number three, it was geographically consistent, so crime fell everywhere across the U.S. cities, across states, rural areas. It was, you know, basically everywhere crime dropped.
And it's important to note that this was really an American crime drop. Crime rates in other comparable countries weren't following the same pattern, with one exception. So in some countries, crime was increasing, some it was stable, and some it was decreasing. And it's not unusual across countries to see some types of crimes going up and some types of crimes going down at the same time.
Right.
I mentioned the exception a minute ago, or you did, but crime rates in Canada largely mirrored crime rates in the U.S. in terms of the two-decade increase from the 1960s to the 1980s and the big comprehensive drop in crime in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so U.S. and Canada crime rates kind of similar. Otherwise, this was kind of a unique thing. And then finally, it was unexpected. And this is big. Like, no one was expecting crime to decrease. Criminologists, politicians, the public, the media, they were all bracing for, like, increasingly more crime and violence throughout the decade. And criminologists were kind of, like, forecasting this idea of super predators, these young, like, super violent, you know, teens roaming the streets. And I would say that in addition to being unexpected, the crime drop also, to this day, I think, remains relatively publicly unknown. People don't know about it. If you ask most people would say that crime's increasing, that it's going up, that society's getting worse and worse and more dangerous. But it's really been the opposite has been happening since the early 90s.
Right. And we have talked before about why that's the case and how the media influences misperceptions about crime and victimization. So what caused the crime drop? And why did crime suddenly and sharply begin to decline in the 1990s?
Well, I mean, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And the short answer is nobody really knows or can agree. So thank you for coming to my TED Talk. That's all. That's all, folks. Good
that's
night.
That's all. Bye-bye. No, you can do better than that.
Okay, well, if I must, I must, I guess. But you know, back to my point that, you know, first of all, we're talking about trying to explain a social phenomena of enormous magnitude and complexity.
Yes.
National crime trends. That alone is kind of a difficult task to do. And then to try to do that statistically or scientifically is ultimately impossible.
Right. And I've mentioned before the different ways that we measure crime. Mm-hmm. So we have official reports, we have victimization surveys. So we always have to think about measuring, recording, reporting, and how that influences crime increases or decreases as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in addition to that, you know, different academic disciplines in terms of, you know, thinking about explanations favor certain explanations over others. And, you know, certain criminologists can't agree on what factors caused the crime drop and which ones didn't. But there are lots of different things that people have pointed to in terms of what influenced the crime drop. And you know, some have a little bit more credibility than others.
Right. So let's talk through some of them, please.
Okay. Let's start with some of the ideas that don't necessarily have a ton of academic support.
Right.
So one of the more interesting and novel explanations was the legalization of abortion. So Stephen Levitt, who was an economist, was famous for making this argument. So, you know, this explanation, the basic notion is that, you know, first of all, unwanted kids are at a greater risk of committing crime because they experience abuse, neglect, lack of supervision, and those other things. And then second of all, that abortion reduces the number of unwanted kids. So the argument is basically that, you know, after Roe v. weight, abortions increased, and that would have resulted in fewer unwanted teens entering their crime-prone years in the 1990s. And again, see our age crime curve episode there. We're talking about kind of the teen structure. But this got, you know, a lot of media attention. This was a novel idea, but not something that has a lot of support among criminologists.
Right.
Another, you know, less so supported idea is the happy pill thesis, and that was advocated by some psychologists who said that, like the proliferation of antidepressants and anti-ADHD medication in the 90s reduced crime and aggressive behavior by teens in particular.
Yes, and this premise seems like it's operating on the simplistic assumption that mental health disorders are related to crime. And we've mentioned repeatedly that it's not a simple relationship.
Yes.
Things like depression and anxiety are not strongly, if at all, associated with crime.
Yeah, yeah. Another very popular hypothesis is the Roaring 90s hypothesis.
Love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
So the great economy of the 1990s, a lot of people think, well, you know, the economy was doing great in the 90s,
yes.
So that reduced crime. And like I said, particularly with the public, that's a popular idea. But the reality is that crime trends aren't super responsive to economic trends.
Will you tell the economists that, please?
Yeah. But like, you know, for example, the roaring 90s, economy was doing great, crime was going down. But then in 2008, we had the Great Recession.
Right.
And so criminologists were really interested to see what would happen to crime rates after the 2008 recession. But they continued to fall and didn't go up.
Yes.
And there are also reasons to believe that a good economy might create more crime. So the, you know, people are out and about, they're going out and, you know, exposing themselves to more victimization, more opportunities. They're, you know, buying more things that may be targets for theft. So overall, at least market or economic trends don't seem to influence crime rates strongly.
And that's not to say that economic inequality is not related to crime.
Yeah, for sure. Economic inequality and poverty in this country exists regardless of what the stock market's doing.
Yes.
If it's going up or if it's going down, you know, people are still poor. The poor getting poorer, richer getting richer. So when we say crime isn't responsive to the economy, we're talking about the ups and downs of
right.
economic trends and not socioeconomic factors like poverty or inequality. The last time that I talked about this in my Justice 210 class, students had a really hard time wrapping their heads around this idea that the, you know, like the state of the economy is different from these, you know, social factors like inequality and poverty and things.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Now we're getting into things that we might have a bit more reason to believe had an effect on the crime decline.
Okay.
So the changing demographic structures of the United States have been hypothesized to have impacted the crime decline. So in the 90s in particular, the baby boomers. Okay, boomer. but my parents are both boomers, I assume.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're, you know, products of the boomer generation. But anyway, in the 90s, the boomers got older. The population structure changed so that the country was made up proportionally of more older people and fewer younger people. Or, you know, there are more older people and more adults in the population to supervise youth. So, again, see our age crime curve episode.
Yeah, whole episode on that.
Yeah. But, you know, I've read a lot of criminologists downplaying this. And, you know, they'll say things like, well, the baby boomers, you know, got old, but then they had kids who were in their, you know, teens in the 90s. Or that, you know, really the proportion of young men in the population didn't significantly change. But then I read one criminologist particularly who said basically demography changes was really the only thing that was similar between the U.S. and Canada that would explain the crime drop in both countries.
Right.
So a lot of the factors that have strong support by criminologists in the U.S. to decrease crime didn't really happen in Canada. So maybe there is something here with this one in terms of demographic structures.
Gotcha.
Another really interesting one is technological changes. And,
yes.
you know, these are things that have certainly happened in the 90s, i.e. probably the biggest thing was the internet kind of happened in the 90s. But, you know, these technology changes are, you know, kind of, again, difficult to measure and hard to test statistically.
Yeah.
But we definitely have technology now that makes it harder to commit crime. You know, we've got more security, more surveillance,
right.
less cash. You know, cash is one of those things that was like really easy to steal now.
Yes.
Everybody's got debit cards and chips and PIN numbers and fraud alerts and, you know, cameras and cell phones and track my iPhone. So all of this technology makes it harder to commit crime. But particularly one article that I read about the crime drop in the 90s pointed especially actually to air conditioning and cable television.
Love it.
As technological changes that had an impact on the crime decline.
I totally get that.
Yeah, when we talk about this in class, it's so much fun to, you know, to talk about how air conditioning and cable television would, you know, reduce crime.
Yeah.
And you know, kids these days don't really understand kind of the innovation that was cable TV, like going from network, just having, you know, those single digit channels to having all of the good juicy channels, and how much of a difference that made into like how much you could watch TV and you could watch.
I was raised by cable television. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I would have gotten into a lot more trouble if I didn't have so much TV to watch.
Yeah, and it's the same idea as with like air conditioning. Before cable TV and before air conditioning, particularly in the summer, you know, your house wasn't cool and there was nothing to do inside, so you hung out on the streets, and that's where trouble happens. So air conditioning and cable television really move social life off the streets and into you know, people's homes, especially in the summer. And of course, you know, with the addition of computers and phones and smartphones, a lot of crime also moved off of the streets and onto online as well.
Internet. Yes, new tool.
Yep. So technology changes. Another really interesting one is lead.
Yes.
The element that Superman can't see through.
Yeah.
So in the 1970s, lead was removed from gasoline and paint.
Yes.
So levels of lead exposure in kids dropped substantially.
Not before I huffed a lot of it, apparently, though. Since I spent more.
Yeah, you
I
ate
spent
a lot
some
of
time in the 70s.
You ate a lot of paint chips as a kid.
Yeah.
But lead exposure is related to serious and permanent reductions in cognitive ability, which doesn't seem to have affected your capacity to get a PhD or, you know, host an informative, insightful podcast.
Thank you. But it can cause cell damage and death in the brain, which reduces executive functioning. Even moderate levels of lead exposure have been shown to increase impulsivity, aggression, ADHD, and lower intelligence.
Yeah, so I read this one article that superimposed a chart of levels of atmospheric lead, measures of levels of atmospheric lead and crime trends on top of each other. And, you know, they're 20 years apart, but obviously kind of the lag there is in terms of, like, development. But it was, like, eerily identical. Like, even minor dips in trends, I mean, I was just kind of blown away how closely those mirrored each other, these tiny fluctuations. And, of course, that's, you know, correlational and anecdotal. It's not causal.
Sure.
But, you know, lead exposure could even, you know, partly explain things like the concentration of crime in poor communities that are older and more dilapidated and still have higher levels of lead in the environment that hasn't been cleaned up. But, you know, in talking about lead, a lot of criminologists don't really like to consider factors like lead exposure as strongly being related to crime.
Right. So criminology is heavily influenced by sociology. Mm-hmm. And so criminologists like to focus on social factors. And the lead hypothesis would largely be a biological explanation, although social in some aspects, right, because of the community that you're in, more likely to have lead exposure. Mm-hmm. But this is politically unpopular.
Yeah, for sure.
So how can you punish someone and label them a criminal bad person if their behavior is a result of brain or cognitive impairment because they've been lead poisoned?
Yeah, lead poison for sure. Next, and of course, as the late great Whitney would or did say to Diane, crack is whack.
Yes, it is.
One of the things that criminologists do believe had an impact on violence, especially juveniles in the late 80s, was the crack market.
Yes.
Not the pharmacological impacts of using crack, but because crack was cheaper and more easily available in poor communities, it was sold on the streets and open air markets, so there was quite a bit of violence associated with the sale of crack, the crack trade. And the crack phenomenon was kind of a short-lived thing. It came, it burned hot.
Yeah.
Pun intended. for a while, and then because of the like publicity and the you know, well-known harms about crack, it kind of like fizzled out quickly. So a lot of criminologists see the waning of the crack market as having an impact on the steep declines in violence and homicide in particular, especially in those early years in the 90s. So certainly not so much anymore, but probably, you know, the decline of the crack market had some contributions to early reductions in crime in the 90s. All right, police, another one. A lot of credit for the kind of cleanup, particularly in New York City, was given to police strategies like broken windows policing, which is kind of about, you know, cracking down on minor disorder things like panhandling and vagrancy and loitering. So that was a new thing that, you know, police were doing in the 90s, is trying these new and different approaches to policing, like broken windows or community policing or zero tolerance policing. And like I said, particularly in New York City, these strategies got a lot of attention, like, oh, yay, yes, the mayor and the police did it. They cleaned up New York City.
Right.
But a lot of criminologists note that the effect of these approaches has probably been overstated.
Yes.
So certainly crime fell in New York City a lot, and maybe even a bit more than other cities, but crime also fell pretty steeply across all cities and places, even if they didn't do these specific policing strategies.
And in more rural areas.
Yeah, exactly. And there were also a lot more police hired in the 90s. The 1994 crime bill provided funds to hire about 100,000 more police officers. So some scholars have pointed to an increase in the number of police more so than the strategies, especially kind of in conjunction with studies showing like things like hotspots policing is effective. But one article that I read said that the increased police may have been responsible for about 5% of the crime decline. So that's really not a huge,
it's not a lot,
not a huge chunk. All right, finally, we have incarceration and imprisonment. So the 90s was a time when prison populations really skyrocketed, especially the second half of the decade. So a lot of people have speculated, okay, you know, prison populations went up and crime went down, so there must be some connection there.
Right.
But first, you know, for about 15 to 20 years prior to the 1990s, prison populations and crime both were increasing at the same time.
Yes.
We also haven't done an episode on deterrence yet, but there's really no evidence to, you know, believe that imprisonment deters crime.
Right.
But in terms of incapacitation, if you're in prison, you're not out in the community committing crime. So through incapacitating repeat offenders, there's the potential to reduce crime. And studies have kind of estimated that between, you know, 5 to 25%, so maybe, you know, on average 15% of the crime decline may be attributed to incapacitation through incarceration.
As we've talked about before on this show, mass incarceration, even at the time, had gone far, far beyond only incarcerating violent repeat offenders.
For sure.
So a little more than half of prison populations today are in prison for a violent offense.
Right.
So about half of people incarcerated are there for nonviolent offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact of mass incarceration on families, communities, taxpayers' wallets, and so on has been drastic.
Yeah. And there's even some research that would indicate that kind of like at high levels, when you pull a whole lot of people out of the community and put them in prison, that that can actually increase crime. But maybe that's a topic for another day or episode on that.
Maybe
at some
so.
Point in the future.
Yes.
So I think that covers the most frequently discussed reasons why crime fell and has continued to fall. Can you think of anything I missed?
No, I think it's just important to point out that nothing explained a big proportion of the drop, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing mentioned explained a big portion of it.
Yeah, even those things that criminologists say, yes, this had an impact. It's like, oh, 5%, 15%.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought that Frank Zimmering was a criminologist, I don't know if he's still alive. Sorry, Frank. But anyway, a criminologist who wrote a book in 2007 about the crime decline. And in the last chapter, he had some kind of like wrap-up points, bulleted numbered points. And I thought several of those were worth kind of mentioning to conclude, kind of reiterating what you just mentioned. But first of all, the crime decline was real.
Yes.
And it was larger and longer than any documented crime decline ever recorded. So it was real.
It
was big. Yeah.
Okay.
But also the crime decline, you know, was an example of a complicated social phenomenon with many complex causes and no singular explanation dominating the others. Like you said, even the ones that criminologists say, like, these are big.
Yeah.
5%.
Yeah.
Statistically, or 15% statistically. There might not be a single convincing reason why crime fell. And it might be the case that, you know, crime rates drop without significant social factors or explanations. I remember reading an article years and years ago, and I don't remember where it was or who wrote it, but basically it said, you know, like, maybe the crime decline was just like a cultural generational change. It's just the culture's changed, and there's not an explanation for it other than culture change. We just became less violent, less criminal.
And not a good way to measure that either.
Yeah, no, no. That absolutely would not be a scientific assessment there. But it is, you know, it is interesting to speculate on reasons why crime decline, why the crime decline did occur and why, you know, why so much crime did decline. But, you know, personally, I wouldn't hitch my apple cart to any one explanation and dogmatically defend it over another.
Yes.
And then finally, with few small notable exceptions like, you know, pandemic, 2020, gun crime, crimes continue to decline from the 1990s until today. So there was a drastic spike in homicides during the pandemic, but by most accounts and in most data, it's, you know, violence rates have quickly returned to pre-pandemic levels and have held steady or continued to decline. So even though we talked a lot today about, you know, crime in the 90s, I would say by and large, the crime decline is still occurring, still going on.
Right.
Anything else?
Got nothing else.
All right, then let's wrap it up with our minute to spin it, where we give our takeaway from the show today. So, Tommy, what's your spin in just a minute?
Well, I guess I do have something else.
Oh, okay.
It's my spin, though, also. It's not really a spin, but I did want to mention that there is a book called The Myth of the Crime Decline, and that while acknowledging a statistical reduction in some crimes, it says there have been things like technology-driven criminal transference, which we kind of mentioned, some crimes becoming obsolete, but also invisible crimes and non-criminal harms have also increased, and those are not well-documented, you know, obviously, if you're not measuring those. They also mentioned some of the things that we've discussed in previous episodes, including the increasing globalization of the illicit. Not to take away from the very real statistical crime drop, because they also admit that there was a very real statistical crime drop, even though the book is called The Myth of the American Crime.
Well, I mean, the question is about, like, well, what are we talking about here? Right. And if we're talking about those kind of, like, eight categories that make up your street crime.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, crime, you know, went online or, you know, the increasing way that, you know, corporations have been destroying the planet and destroying our environment.
Yes.
And that's not considered a, you know, a crime that criminologists, mainstream criminologists study.
But it was an attempt to kind of broaden the picture. So, Ben, what's your spin?
Oh, beautiful for crime rates dropped from sea to shining sea. I had my hand over my heart while I was seeing that. Anyway, don't fall for the fear-mongering level of crime and violence in society are at an all-time low and definitely way below what they were in the 80s and 90s. And let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that it stays that way.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website linked in show notes to see how you can support our educational programming.